So let's first of all consider the case for the robots then. Carolyn, what do you think about this?
I think it's a no-brainer. Certainly in the short term, robots are the way to go. We've just heard about some of the hazards that humans face, even if you can get them to Mars in one piece, then the dangers of on the surface, you know, the reduced gravity, the radiation. And the thing about robots is they're a lot less fussy, they're a lot less fragile, and you don't have to send so much kit with them. So in many ways, they're a much more efficient way of exploring. Today, robots can do everything that humans can do. Maybe they don't do it so efficiently. Maybe we just have to be a bit more patient. We'll get our science a bit more slowly. But at the minute, there's no pressing need to be sending humans.
Sanjeev, you've been involved in the Curiosity mission, which is a pretty big mission. I mean, that's a mini-sized rover that's crawling around on Mars. Would you concur with what Carolyn's saying?
Oh, not at all, I'm afraid. I'm a terrestrial geologist. I'm a geologist who works on Earth, does field work on Earth, and I've moved into the planetary sphere. And whilst Curiosity can do amazing things, it's incredibly slow for me. What we do in days, a human could do in minutes. And that's the issue, is that we've been on Mars for 3 years now. We've got some spectacular discoveries, but we can't look around. We can't go this way, that way. We can't make rapid decisions. We're not adaptable because of latency effects, etc. So I think a human on Mars could very, very rapidly do the sort of geological characterization, the geological science that even, you know, looking 10, 20 years ahead, a robot simply is not capable of doing just because of the human cognitive aptitudes.
It's just technology, though, isn't it? I mean, it's just a question of writing better computer programs to run these things better.
Have you tried doing geology? It's very, very hard. The thing is that there's not simple patterns in the geological record. And, you know, scientifically, the first thing we're going to do when we get to Mars is actually look at the geological science. We want to understand the geological evolution of Mars. Did life evolve? Finding those things is incredibly difficult. There's a lot of rock on Mars, and a rover maybe travels 20 kilometers in its lifetime. And, you know, I think Curiosity's just done over 10 kilometers. And secondly, there's large areas of Mars, which are very, very interesting, that it would be very difficult to get robots to.
Carolyn, you're sort of nodding and shaking your head in equal measure.
Well, I agree that it would be nice luxury to send human astronauts to do this job much more efficiently. I just dispute that it's actually required now. There are two questions. I mean, one is, of course, is whether we can do all the science with the rovers and the orbiters and even the stationary spacecraft such as Phoenix. Yes, they can do it, maybe more slowly, but it's a matter of, is getting the science just that much faster relevant for the huge cost it might bring and the huge danger to humans going out there?
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, one has to, when you're making a decision about doing research, weigh up the pros and cons in terms of what I can get bang for my buck. And Sanjeev, what you're sort of suggesting is, yeah, let's get some humans on Mars, but the price, you think how much science we could actually do with the same spend, both from orbit, which is much cheaper, and also maybe even just from here on Earth?
We could do a lot, but I think nobody's thinking that we're going to do this immediately. So the plans are in the next 20, 30 years for humans to Mars to do science properly. So I think it's the planning stages at the moment.
But Richard, did you want to come in?
Well, I wanted to offer a compromise here. Something that the European Space Agency and NASA are seriously looking at is to have a mission to Phobos or a mission to the orbit of Mars and then be able to control rovers on the surface. So that way you eliminate the time delay and you can effectively have them as avatars on the surface.
This is the problem that because it's so far to Mars that even at the speed of light, these radio control signals, you've got a latency of, you know, a delay of many, not just seconds, but minutes, hours, haven't you?
Which is why they're building a lot of more autonomy into the new rovers, like the ExoMars rover, which would be the European rover to Mars. But Tim Peake, the British European Space Agency astronaut who's flying to the space station in December, he will be doing one of these experiments and actually operating from the space station a rover in the Mars yard, which is a simulated Mars environment in Stevenage. So actually to simulate that.
And Carolyn, what's the price as well of, you know, because you alluded to cost, everyone's sort of talked about cost, but what do we think it's actually likely to start costing?
I've got absolutely no idea. I mean, just thousands of billions would be my guess. I mean, maybe that's an exaggeration. I just wanted to come back.
Ryan's just waving his hand. He's got an idea of the price tag. What do you think the price tag is?
The lowest estimated cost that I've seen for human Mars missions are on the order of $10 billion or so. So for comparison with Curiosity, which was around $2 billion, a factor of four more potentially in the cost for a human mission. Yeah, certainly I think you can justify that.
I just wanted to go back to Richard's compromise. If you're going to send astronauts all the way to Phobos, you're still exposing them to the same danger. It's still going to not actually cost an awful lot less. And if you're going to go all the way to Phobos, well, you might as well just go to the surface of Mars. I don't think that's much of a compromise, really.
I think one of the things that this is a compromise option eliminates, at least in the short term, is the problem of getting to Mars and getting back off again. Because we've talked about sample return. When you talk to NASA scientists about this, no one has managed to get even a coffee cup sized sample of material off Mars. So unless you're going to go on a one-way trip, which is what Mars One are proposing, getting back is a real, genuine concern.
Sanjeev, because your question and your point is that we want some samples, and it's very hard to do this sort of science when you're not on Mars.
But more importantly, you don't just collect samples. As a geologist, you gain context, and that's very difficult to do from a distance. And so I think even doing it from Deimos or Phobos is really difficult. And I think what's happening now is really a serious attempt to start thinking about resources on Mars and what you could use as propellant to get back. So I think, you know, it's not going to happen instantly, but people are thinking about that. And they won't really consider that if they can do it, if the resources are there to be able to provide propellant to get humans back from the surface of Mars.
Propellant equals rocket fuel.
That's right.
I think a key thing, though, that we're all in agreement is that we need robots at the minute. Whether or not we're going to be sending human astronauts to Mars, they're vital as scouts, really, to prep, you know, just as precursors, to find where the resources are, the possible landing sites, to assess the climate, the radiation damage. We need to test things like, we were just talking about the launch, the landing technology, the piloting, and even just delivery of equipment, habitats, fuel, food, everything that we need is all going to be robotic, even long before you send the astronauts. So whether or not you send the astronauts, we still need to develop the robot technology, just as that scouting and that testing ground.
In other words, we need them anyway, so we may as well just solve this problem in the course of solving the next one, don't we? Now, the other question is, of course, why do we want to go to Mars? What can we learn about Mars? Interestingly, this year's Christmas lectures at the Royal Institution are all about the future of space travel and space exploration, and they're being delivered by UCL's Kevin Fong.
Mars, I think, is a large piece of the puzzle when it comes to asking the question of how ubiquitous life is in the universe. We know that 4 billion years ago, conditions on Mars were at least similar to, if not the same, as they were on Earth. We know that that was around about the time that life first arose on our planet. And so if we go to Mars and it proves to be sterile and always has been sterile, then it means that Earth is indeed very, very special. And there's something particularly special about it that allows a life to claw its way in and develop. If we go there and find that there is life now, or there ever has been life on Mars, it probably means that life is ubiquitous in the universe, because it suggests that wherever life has a chance, it will claw in, at least in some basic form. So I think it is essential that we explore Mars. I think it has some of the most important answers that we seek in the 21st century.
Kevin Fong, who's clearly very eager to see the secrets of Mars unlocked. You're listening to The Naked Scientists with me, Chris Smith.